by way of clear digital audio. 22,500 miles above the planet. This is the Global Star Radio Network.
The news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, hopefully this hour, the views of Joel Skelton from World Affairs Brief. But until Joel gets here, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Iran today. And in Iran, of course, you have the mullahs, and, of course, the president of the company is a man named Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and, of course, or Muhammad Ahmadinejad, and he is really almost a caricature, you know, with his little stubbly beard and his little little white little jacket, rain jacket, and he, of course, is threatening America and telling us we don't have the courage to attack them, and he's going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, and certainly we see that. You know, he's recently announced he has 3,000 centrifuges working around the clock to generate uranium, whereas really, if you really wanted to turn out any significant amount of uranium, it would take 50,000 centrifuges to do it. So why would he be raising these issues, especially when the United Nations inspection team had apparently just reported back that Iran was working very closely with them, was making, you know, information readily available and was going to allow a full inspection of their nuclear development facilities. So why is Ahmadinejad, almost as if he's playing a part, doing everything he can to get America involved in a war with Iran? And why would any rational person want that? Because think of all the suffering. Nobody in their right mind would want a war, but are we really working with people in their right mind? And certainly we look at Iran today, a 17% inflation, gasoline rationing, a rising unemployment, increasing unrest in the country. It would probably topple, you know, within 6 or 8 months and be brought down internally if it weren't that it would appear that our administration so was intent to go to war with this government that's really hanging on precariously. Well, we've got Joel Skousen here, so let's get the latest information from World Affairs Brief. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
Fine, Dr. Stan. Thank you. And certainly your opening comments are aligned with what I'm writing about in the World Affairs Brief this week. The Iran strike is coming and getting close.
And
the evidence
of
U.S. intent to launch massive airstrikes against Iran is reaching a crescendo. And so is the inflamed rhetoric from the administration and media mouthpieces, as Iran is accused again and again of exaggerated, quote, murderous support for the insurgency in Iraq. This is the weak link in all of the things the United States is claiming the Iranians are involved in. Yes, the Iranians do support Hezbollah in Lebanon, but they've been very careful to avoid antagonizing the U.S. Directly in Iraq. They don't want to hand them an excuse to attack. You know, despite Ahmadinejad's inflamed rhetoric, this is part of the territory, and when you're dealing with fundamentalist Muslims, I don't think he is deliberately, shall I say, trying to provoke the war, but I think he's been selected by those in power who are working with the Russians to, in essence, and perhaps most people in the ruling class in Iran don't realize that they're being set up to be sacrificed for the cause of a future justification for war against America. In other words, the real axis of evil, Russia and China, want the United States to appear as the bully of the world, and the globalists running our own government want that to appear. They want this war to occur.
And I'm sure the Russians and the Chinese would just love to fight to the last American soldier in the Middle East, while somebody else, of course, has to do the fighting. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen, and I share Joel's concern. I believe the war is imminent.
Now you can upgrade your existing gravity filter to remove chemicals such as trimethylenes, atrazine, benzene, chlorine, chloroform, and MTBE to below detectable limits. Black murky elements are so powerful, they remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and transform water, even raw, stagnant pond water, into delicious crystal clear drinking water. Nitrates, nitrites, radon 222, unwanted heavy metals like lead, mercury, and aluminum are no problem. Foul tastes like chlorine and obnoxious sulfur odors are removed without removing the healthful and beneficial minerals that your body needs. Black murky elements flow 1.5 to 2 times faster than ordinary gravity elements, which means it takes much less time to filter your water. Supercharge your gravity filter today. Upgrade to black murky purification elements.
Get a 2-pack, only $99, or a 4-pack, only $188. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at burkeywater.com.
Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com.
What's better than a tiny tiger in your tank? A tornado under your hood. A tornado is an easy-to-install, maintenance-free air twister designed to increase gas mileage. I personally commissioned independent tests to verify results in 6 vehicles, and all of them gained MPG with tornado. With today's gas prices, it makes sense to cage the gas-saving power of a tornado. Visit tornadoair.com or go to Pep Boys, Napa, or AutoZone today.
Each night when you sleep, your body uses a time to restore itself so that you could wake up feeling renewed. But wouldn't it be nice to also wake up looking younger? Now there's Night Skin, a serum that goes on while you sleep to reduce age spots, reduce the appearance of wrinkles, and moisturize the skin. Night Skin was made by Dr. Arthur Perry, a board-certified cosmetic surgeon, as an alternative to some invasive surgeries. It has real ingredients that have been shown to reduce the signs of aging and fight natural sun damage, all while you get a good night's sleep. Try Night Skin today and see what it's like to wake up feeling renewed, both inside and out.
Try Night Skin risk-free by calling 1-800-894-3418. Night Skin is guaranteed to renew your skin overnight. Turning back the clock has never been this easy. Try Night Skin risk-free today. Call 1-800-894-3418. That's 1-800-894-3418.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest is Joel Skousen, and I was just saying that I agree with Joel's assessment that we are very, very close to a strike in the Middle East, and everything we get, you know, coming from sources all across that area and here in the United States, and military officers and intelligence officers are willing to talk, suggest the war is imminent. Joel, pick up the story.
Well, I'm going to quote from some of these sources just to give your audience realization. This is very evident to people who are close to the administration. Alex DeBott, Director of Terrorism and National Security at the Nixon Center, is saying the Pentagon has drawn up plans for massive airstrikes against 1,200 targets in Iran designed to annihilate the Iranians' military capability in 3 days. The U.S. military planners are not preparing for pinprick strikes against Iran's nuclear facilities. They're talking about taking out the entire Iranian military. Robert Baer, the Middle Eastern CIA operative and a man who's not unconnected with the intelligence world, says his sources tell him that we're planning to hit Iran. Barnett Rubin, a scholar and one of the serious people in the academic foreign policy community, says we're already committed to an attack on Iran, and the marketing for this attack will be ramped up after the long Labor Day weekend. Another source, Ken Silverstein of Harper, says that a former CIA official and friend of his told him, until recently I thought the odds of the United States would attack Iran were less than 50-50, but the chances of a military confrontation are clearly growing. He said one of his friends, the CIA official who was stationed at the Persian Gulf during the first war, said, I don't think the administration is about to carry out military action. The military does not want this. If we lose planes, there'll be a massive airstrike over Iran. We'll have pilots and pilots killed and captured. Yesterday, he called the same official who speaks to me off the record, and now he believes the military strike is likely. He says, and I quote, it looks like a military strike is in the works, and I base these on two things, observable fact and the rhetoric emanating from the White House. There's a clear movement of troops and material into the region. It's stuff the United States can't hide. It's a huge expense to put military battle groups in the Gulf, and we've got three of them there now. We've also moved new fighter planes to Guam amidst much public fanfare. You can plainly see the upturn in naval activity in and around Norfolk. The movement of ships, resupply, ammunition loading, and general level of activity is extremely high. The Navy facilities and ammunition loading are well known, and the activity is visible, especially at night. In other words, they're working day and night. There's a stream of ships coming in to load up, and when they take off, a new one comes in. It's only one part of the world where all this stuff is heading, the Middle East. Also, everyone I know who's involved in an attack on Iran, pilots and other air assets, is already gone. Normally, some of them are around, but now all of them are away at the same time. So that's pretty dramatic evidence, Dr. Stan, that something's coming, and everyone close to the military can see it.
Well, I think, you know, that what really bothers me most, Joel, is that most Americans aren't concerned about it. It's just like, well, you know, it's like a television program, but somehow they think this is not going to affect them in any way. And even if our military is successful, and they probably will be because we have a very efficient military, the implications as far as what's going to happen to the other countries there in the Middle East, I think, is really frightening. Certainly, Pakistan is on the verge of revolution. There's a tremendous rise in the radical Islamic power in Turkey, and certainly in Egypt, and even in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is beginning to train all sorts of new people for security. They're worried about a revolution. The same in Kuwait and the other very Sikhdoms down there along the Arabian Peninsula. I mean, I think that whole area could certainly be lost to the radical Islamists if we attack Iran.
Well, in fact, that, according to my general theory, is precisely what the globalists want. They want, in fact, and by the way, I do not think this attack on Iran is going to launch World War III. I think what it's going to do is finish off the propaganda campaign that's been in the offing ever since our attacks in the Balkans, where we alienated all the Slavic people. We're now busy attacking all the Muslim countries and alienating the Islamic people worldwide. And this is part of a concerted plan, it appears, from globalists, who we call neocons in the administration, or at least their minions, doing the actual policy and strategizing within the Bush administration. This is a very concerted agenda to create an image that the U.S. is the bully of the world. This is absolutely necessary before Russia and China can feel confident that they can attack the United States and have the support of a great portion of the world. That support will come from the fact that the U.S. is turning itself into the lone hegemon, the great bully of the world. We're making ourselves the ugly American if it were not true before.
And, of course, George Bush talked about all the allies. You know, we're not there in Iraq by ourselves. We've got all these other countries that are there helping us. This is a, you know, sort of United Nations effort. And, of course, most of the other countries have pulled out. And now we find even Great Britain is beginning to get their soldiers out of southern Iraq. And we're going to be there all by ourselves. If we go to war with Iran, I suspect we're really going to antagonize our potential allies.
You know, what's interesting, Dr. Stan, is the Brits have been pulling out wholesale for years. They're down to less than 5,000 troops now.
Yep.
It's nothing they're not really a major ally in presence, and they've moved back to the airport because they intend to get out of the way as soon as this attack on Iran starts.
But, of course, the question is, will the Iranians simply just sit there and take it, or will they retaliate? And, of course, I'm sure our leaders feel that should Iran retaliate, that would be terribly unfair. And I'm sure that the American people would feel, well, what right would Iran have to attack our troops or our military or our ships or maybe even to try to attack America?
Well, there are two scenarios here that I'd like to discuss. One is that the U.S. will do a preliminary strike to trigger on nuclear facilities, for example, to trigger Iranian military retaliation. Then they'll use the fact that Americans have been hit to massively destroy the Iranian military. Now, that's one scenario. The other scenario is that they'll virtually do a blitzkrieg aerial attack and try to stop Iranians from getting anything off the ground militarily at all. And it's going to be either one of those two scenarios. If they need a justification for a massive attack in Iran, they may well let Iran do some missile retaliation against U.S. forces. They may sacrifice some of our troops to justify obliterating Iran's military. However, if there is, as some suspect, agent provocateur attack on the United States that can be falsely linked to Iran, then in fact they'll use the blitzkrieg attack on with a massive retaliation so that there's no possibility of, massive attack so there's no possibility of retaliation.
But you know, the thing is, Joel, there are an awful lot of Americans who are sitting here prepared for this sort of a phony false flag operation. An awful lot of them are thinking about it or talking about it. It's not going to be as easy to put over as it was on 9/11.
There's certainly a lot of scrutiny. Almost 30 million Americans don't trust the administration version of 9/11. So it's going to be interesting to see how they pull this off. It would be very difficult, in my opinion, right now, even despite the inflaming rhetoric of the administration, to actually pull off a massive attack on Iran without some other provocation other than the nuclear issue. I just don't think they can do it. So I'm expecting something, that will be. But it's going to come soon. They can't continue to put people on high alert and keep three carrier task forces out there in the Straits of Hormuz without having some justification. It's just very expensive to do that. These shipments of arms that are occurring right now indicate that it's still a few weeks off at the earliest, but it could be coming soon.
Well, because I like to watch the price of gold because I think it's like the canary in the mine shaft. And I don't know if you've been noticing the price of gold in the last couple of days, but, it's taking off like a rocket. I mean, it's pushing $700. And obviously, when the price of gold is going up, something is going to happen. We don't know what it is, but obviously some people know that something big is afoot.
Yes, that's another one of the many indications. One of the interesting articles that came out on Renz.com was the one by a blogger on DailyCost.com who said he had a friend who was an LSO. An LSO is a landing signal officer. Carrier pilots such as myself in the Vietnam era used LSOs to control your carrier landing. And at any rate, this LSO, who happens to be a woman officer in the Navy, says, "We're going to attack Iran." She said, "All the air operational planning and asset tasking have been finished. That means that all the targets have been chosen, prioritized, and tasked to specific aircraft, bases, carriers, missile cruisers, etc." And this is very important. The people on these ships obviously know. Now, they're sworn to secrecy, and she's put herself at great risk, is talking anonymously to this blogger, but puts herself at great risk because this is the type of thing that can get somebody court-martialed and tried for treason, actually, when you talk about specific operational plans and attack times and staging of weapons, etc. Now, obviously, the Russians have satellites and the Chinese and know that this is going on, too. So it really doesn't defeat, you know, much of American purpose unless they were to tell the date of the attack, which she isn't. But her, more importantly, the comments that she makes are very telling. I'm getting from her the indications that there's a lot more discontent in the American military than meets the eye. You know, we see all the Photoshop or photo sessions on television about the president going there and having all of this support. But this support is eroding strongly, according to her, among Navy and Marines on board carriers.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment right here at Genesis.
Nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps potassium iodate gives you virtually...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
what this is all about, why we want to attack Iran, and as he said in the article, it's an excellent article on Rents. You know, ordinarily the officers never question, they just carry out their orders, but for the first time she's seeing a sense of, well, uneasiness among the military officers, almost as if they know that what we're about to enter into is wrong. Pick up the story there, Joel.
Well, she says that things that happen at the senior level, officer level, seem more and more to happen outside the purview of the XOs. Now, XOs are the executive officers. And she mentions also other officers who typically have a say-so in daily combat and flight operations. In other words, she just says, orders come down from the top, and there's no questioning, there's no discussion. So nobody's let in on them. They're just kind of like they hold them in secret at the higher level, and then they give them the orders to move. And it's a very important, you know, when to have the operational officers to have a say when you're planning fighter and bomber operations off a carrier, because sometimes those orders can be very, very dangerous if they're flying into a lot of military anti-aircraft fire or missiles, which has often happened during Vietnam. We saw the same thing when I was in the military, where we, you know, had these rules of engagement and restrictions. We were required to not attack certain targets. In this case, of course, it's just the opposite. We're going after a ruthless attack on a government with no holds barred. There is virtually no type of safe zone from this kind of warmongering agenda, such as we saw in the Vietnam conflict, where lots of things were off limits to keep the communists in the action for many years. And I think that's because the purpose of the Vietnam War was really to destroy America's taste for war as to containing communism. Whereas now that they've got another purpose for war, that is of engendering hatred against America, there's no way that we deal in the same kind of limited warfare that we had in Vietnam. So another thing she senses is that people keep their voices very low if they have any criticism at all. She said last night in the galley, an ensign asked, what right do we have to tell a sovereign nation that they can't build a nuclear weapon? I mean, the table got E.F. Hutton quiet, she said, not so much because the man was asking a question, it was, because it was that off culture, but what he was asking was a good question. In fact, the discussion actually followed afterwards, topside, meaning outside on the deck, where someone in our group had to, quote, smoke a cigarette. That was code for meaning that we've got to take this out of the room where we can discuss it in private. They also spoke in lowered voices. It's like you aren't allowed to ask the questions that we always used to ask before in combat. Yes, we're going to hit Iran big time, she says. And I think she's right.
And I do, too. And I really am very, very concerned by the implications of this and the fact that most Americans are really not prepared psychologically or in any other way for what may lie ahead. So anyway,
This most likely is the reason for the sudden request for $50 billion more, supposedly, for the Iraq-Afghan war. William Matthews writes that word from the White House plans to ask for an extra $50 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, quote, came as a surprise to us, an aide to a senior member of the House Appropriations Committee told him. At the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Robert Gates had much the same reaction. That's news to me, he said. Now, I don't believe that for a minute. He knows darn well that, of course, it may be true. It may not have brought him into the thing. The point is, the Pentagon spends the money whether it's there or not, and it leaves it up to the administration to cover for them. They just take their marching orders and do what it takes. Even members of Congress and Pentagon officials expected that there would be a request for more money were shocked that it was for so much so soon. I believe this kind of money may be in reality a down payment on the larger war with Iran. Now, there's also the funny aspect of the so-called accidental flight of three nuclear missiles on a B-52 from Minot Air Force Base to Barksdale Air Force Base in Arkansas. I don't think it was accidental at all, Dr. Stan. And I'm not buying this story that these missiles got accidentally hung on the wing of a B-52 and flown from one Air Force base to another.
Yeah, that maybe we can cover that when we get back. But obviously, you know, there's something very, very peculiar about that story. We'll be back in just a moment here with Joel Skousen. Go ahead. Just hang on. We'll be right back.
Right. I'm on the interview right now.
This broadcast is available on MP3 CD format at GCNLive.com or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
Introducing the most efficient gravity filter available. You know, if you were to throw 100 ball bearings at a magnet, most would bounce off. But if you placed them on the magnet, all would stick. The same principle applies in water filtration. Most filtration systems force water through the filter at 60 to 90 PSI, causing water molecules to race through the filter in less than a second. The Berkey Light is different. Water molecules take 5 to 10 minutes to pass through the torturous path.
I'm on a break right now, so I can help you. We're about sorry.
Media formulation to remove and reduce pathogenic bacteria, cysts, chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, organic solvents, foul tastes, odors, heavy metals, and nitrates. It is so powerful it purifies raw, untreated water from remote lakes, streams, and stagnant ponds.
Get the Advanced Berkey Light Purifier for only $279 by calling New Millennium 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Each night when you sleep, your body uses the time to restore itself so that you could wake up feeling renewed. But wouldn't it be nice to also wake up looking younger? Now there's Night Skin, a serum that goes on while you sleep to reduce age spots, reduce the appearance of wrinkles, and moisturize the skin. Night Skin was made by Dr. Arthur Perry, a board-certified cosmetic surgeon, as an alternative to some invasive surgeries. It has real ingredients that have been shown to reduce the signs of aging and fight natural sun damage, all while you get a good night's sleep. Try Night Skin today and see what it's like to wake up feeling renewed, both inside and out.
Try Night Skin risk-free by calling 1-800-894-3418. Night Skin is guaranteed to renew your skin overnight. Turning back the clock has never been this easy. Try Night Skin risk-free today. Call 1-800-894-3418. That's 1-800-894-3418.
Gasoline prices are out of control. Are you tired of giving your hard-earned dollars to the major oil companies? Did you know that the oil companies have developed special products to increase mileage in their own vehicles? Very few consumers even know such products exist. This technology is backed by hundreds of thousands of dollars of testing that the oil companies have run. Yet they don't want you to know about them. SFR, the leader in fuel products, has obtained this technology, and we are so convinced you'll notice the savings that we will give you, the loyal GCN listener, a bottle for free. SFR is not an injector cleaner or typical gas treatment found at your local store. SFR works so well that it even improves mileage on new cars. Just pay a minimal shipping and handling charge. If you're not completely delighted with the savings, we'll even refund the shipping charge. Share the oil company's secret and get SFR now. What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-USE-SFR1. That's 1-888-873-7371 today.
Communication Network, and our guest is Joel Skousen, and we're going to be talking about World Affairs Brief and the latest things there. So, Joel, is there anything else you want to cover on this issue before we go on to the next one?
Yes, I wanted to explain why this is very illogical that three nuclear cruise missiles get be accidentally hung on the wing of a B-52. Nuclear missiles have special labels and are kept in highly secure bunkers separate, completely separate from non-nuclear weapons. All kinds of paperwork have to be filled out authorizing and tracking the move of every nuclear weapon. There's no possibility that they could have accidentally mixed up and just hung on a wing of a B-52 these weapons. In fact, this whole story was a plant in some regards because, or a leak from someone at Barksdale Air Force Base or wherever it came from, because, you know, the takeoff and landing between Minot, which is houses B-52s, and Barksdale has hundreds of B-52 bombs. This is a non-event to have a B-52 landing with cruise missiles slung under the wing. But obviously if somebody noticed three of them were nuclear on the wing, that would be something, and they leaked it. Well, it got to the press, Barksdale Air Force Base happens to be the jumping-off point for these aircraft leaving for the Middle East. This appears to be pre-positioning of nuclear weapons in the Middle East. Now, this brings up the larger question, will the U.S. use the nuclear option in Iran? I think it's possible, not only because they may need nukes to try to destroy deep underground military bunkers and nuclear facilities in Iran, but also because Iran may want to get the first use of nukes out of the way and into the open. Now, this is a very important doctrine of first use. Nuclear weapons haven't been used since Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and so they're essentially gone back into the point of no one dares use them. That was the philosophy reigning during the Cold War. In the globalist long-term agenda of inducing a future nuclear attack on American military forces, it makes it just that much easier for the Russians and Chinese to use nukes on America if America's already used them first. And I may, so it's my theory, or at least it works into my general theory, that there may be a reason for using the attack on Iran's deep underground nuclear bunkers as the excuse for the first use of nuclear weapons since World War II. This opens up Pandora's box and makes it easier for America to be attacked by Russia and China later on.
The genie will be out of the bottle forever. Well, before we go on, Joe, let's get your website out there and how people can get a copy of your World Affairs Brief if they'd like to subscribe to it.
The World Affairs Brief is my weekly internet analysis newsletter, and it's showcased on my website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com. You can, listeners can get a sample issue of the World Affairs Brief by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. And if they want the brief that we're talking about today as the sample, they can email me tomorrow after it comes out at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. There's lots of other interesting things on the website. My volunteer researchers put all the top news stories right on the web page for you to click on the links to read what we'll be analyzing during the week. There's lots of archival materials about government cover-ups and things that my analysis of world events. Of special interest is my general theory, which is under the title Strategic Threats of the Coming Decade. That's a very interesting read, which I recommend to all of your listeners.
Amen. Well, it's an excellent website, and I go there every day. All right, fine. Now, are there any other, what's the next issue you'd like to cover?
The next issue is the North Korea's U.S. agreement claiming that the North Koreans will dismantle their entire nuclear program. Chris Hill, the U.S. representative to the six-party talks, was triumphant in his announcement. Again, as before in the 1990s, it's too good to be true. We've been there before. North Korea has never even acknowledged or allowed inspection of its many underground nuclear tunnels and storage facilities, so we have to take its word that, quote, all of its facilities are to be dismantled. Isn't this interesting, Dr. Stan, how easily we take North Korea's word for dismantling, and yet we never take Iran's word for it? It's almost as if, as a prelude, this is a very important point, it's almost as if as a prelude to the attack on Iran that's coming, the U.S. is anxious to dispose of the nuclear North Korean nuclear problem to prove to the world that the U.S. successfully negotiated away the nuclear threat in North Korea, but that it was Iran's fault that we couldn't negotiate with them. In fact, it's the U.S. that's bending over backwards to talk with Pyongyang and simultaneously putting up huge barriers to talk with Iran. The U.S. has this position with Iran that it has to abandon its nuclear program as a precondition for talks. Now, that's an extremely important point. What's there to talk about if, as a precondition, you have to capitulate your entire position in the talks? Isn't that ironic?
Well, I think there are a lot of inconsistencies out there, but unfortunately, most people accept things exactly as they're presented to us.
Well, there's a glitch arriving, of course, in this. The New York Times writes that North Korea announced Monday that the United States had agreed to lift economic sanctions and remove Pyongyang from the list of terror-sponsoring countries, a move that would satisfy one of Pyongyang's principal conditions for giving up its nuclear program. Well, immediately, of course, the United States comes out very embarrassed that North Korea, with its record of cheating on agreements and worldwide proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, is being let off so easily off the terrorism list. So it was denying that it ever said so. Now, I don't believe for a minute that North Korea would make such a grandiose announcement if, in fact, the U.S. had not promised it to them. I am convinced that the U.S. did promise this to North Korea, but that they didn't want it announced until after year's end, when it could come after a token certification that North Korea had shut down its nuclear program. And I say token because the U.S. is planning on certifying that it's been shut down, even though North Korea is only planning on shutting down its main nuclear reactor. It has made no demands on North Korea that allows the U.N. to hunt for, or that is, the U.S. has made no demands that North Korea allow us to hunt for and search out its multiple secret underground nuclear facilities. Nor has the U.S. demanded that it destroy its existing stockpile of nuclear weapons. Now contrast all of that with our demands on Iran.
It's rather
inconsistent. This is more than just hypocrisy. This begs for another explanation, Dr. Stan. And I think, in light of my general theory, I believe that North Korea is being saved for a trigger for World War III, and that Iran is only a stepping stone in the further antagonization of the Muslim world, giving and handing Russia and China the excuse to eventually attack. There will be a trigger event leading to World War III, and I think it will either be Taiwan or North Korea. And that's why they're being preserved. That's why the U.S. continues to capitulate and give in and look the other way for egregious behavior on North Korea, who is the greatest pariah in the world, makes Iran look like Santa Claus in comparison. And yet we continue to protect these evils in North Korea. And I think it's because this is an issue being preserved for a later trigger attack.
I think what really disturbs me about North Korea is that we always seem to be able to find some reason to continue supporting that administration and giving them oil and food and the other things they need. And they did that under the Clinton administration. They're doing that under the Bush administration. And, of course, when we're not supplying them with food or supplies, more than South Korea is, and it's almost as if we are intentionally keeping the communist government in power there in North Korea for a specific purpose. And perhaps you're right, your appraisal is exactly right, but I believe that regime would have fallen long ago without aid from the West and from our allies.
Right, again. Well, we'll see how these things come out. I think we're going to see some results of our prognostications in the coming weeks, and we'll have a lot to talk about there. So as my final topic, I'd like to talk about a little bit in detail about why I believe we ought to support Ron Paul and his candidacy for president, even if he can't win. This is the most common question I receive among the minority of subscribers who are reluctant to, quote, waste time on a Don Quixote-type political candidacy like Ron Paul's. Most of you know that I don't think that we're going to win back our freedoms politically, though it is certain that even the powers that be are still concerned enough about America's waking up to their awful situation that they continue to pour huge resources into manipulating public opinion. I also harbor no hopeful illusions about controlling the corrupt Republican Party, which has been taken over by globalists, as have the Democrats. That's why I've been more inclined towards principled third parties like the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party. However, it is my experience that barely 2% of the nation is capable of coming to a fully principled understanding of the issues under optimal conditions. That's just the nature of good, soft people who are too spread out or lack the intellectual vigor to really think through the issues. So any larger movement of good people has to be driven by a combination of feel-good sound bites and bandwagon patriotism, something we're not, prone to do more often. This is something that more that the Republican establishment uses to get good people to stay within the Republican Party. So why then support a candidacy of Ron Paul? It's simply because Ron Paul is capable of building the liberty movement like no other person or organization presently can, and it will probably be his last effort due to increasing age. it may be our last chance to boost the numbers of people who will form the core of those determined to someday say to the government and the New World Order, don't tread on me, I'm not going in that direction. So we have vast numbers of people. It takes vast numbers of people to make an effective stand against tyranny. Right now, Ron Paul is the most articulate and visible champion we have. I think Ron is gathering people from all across the political spectrum, unlike what we find within the small niche of conservative third parties, like the Constitution Party, the American Independent Party, or even the Libertarian Party. They have a limited, narrow spectrum, each one. But Ron Paul is pulling people from all across the spectrum. I've been even interviewed by radio stations on the left in Southern California, Dr. Stan, who are fed up with the Democratic go-along party and are talking about supporting Ron Paul. I mean, I've never seen this happen before, where principled liberal leftists, that means people who just believe in helping other people out of the goodness and don't understand the hidden victims of socialism. These are good leftists or good liberals. They aren't trying to destroy the country openly. And these people are seeing that Ron Paul can do what we all need to do. And I've never seen that before. It's amazing.
Well, I think he's handling himself just beautifully in these debates.
He really has. You know, it was just wonderful to see him operating in the New Hampshire debate, even though they clearly skewed the debate against him. They gave Giuliani 9 questions, only Ron Paul 5, and two of those were actual digs at his position. And the top candidates kept spouting the virtues of Iraq intervention, and they were countered effectively by Ron Paul.
I thought it was so interesting that in the polling afterwards, why he got 30% of the vote and far above anybody else, and of course then they kept saying, well, that was just because his supporters were calling in over and over and over again, and of course they knew that the way the telephone system has worked, you only got one call from each telephone, so they were trying to distort really the overwhelming support for Ron Paul. I think they're scared to death of him.
Yes, so they realize that he probably can't ever break into mainstream unless they give him some real publicity, and they're refusing to do that here. And this should be the biggest story on the media, is how Ron Paul continues to garner the largest votes in all of these. And, you know, these things come from separate IP addresses. This is no way this is done by a big spam machine. Ron Paul has really said the right things. For example, when Governor Huckabee, who claimed, you know, that we can't leave Iraq till it's fixed because we bought it, because we broke it. You know, that's just so shallow in reasoning. He says we've got a responsibility to the honor of this country and the honor of every man and woman who has served in Iraq and ever served in them, not to leave them with anything less than the honor they deserve. Well, this is dangerous rhetoric. Ron Paul had a great answer. He says the American people didn't go in there. There's a few people advising this administration, a small number of people called neoconservatives, have hijacked our foreign policy. They're responsible, not the American people. They're not responsible, and we shouldn't punish them for this. And then Huckabee responds, Congressman, we are one nation. We can't be divided. We have to be one nation under God. That means if we make a mistake, we make it as a single country. I mean, this is just ludicrous what Huckabee is saying. Paul responds, no, when we make a mistake, it's the obligation of the people through their representatives to correct the mistake, not to continue the mistake. We've dug a hole for ourselves and we've dug a hole for our party. We're losing elections and we're going down next year if we don't change it. And it all has to do with foreign policy. We have to wake up to this fact. How long do we have to pay the price to save face? This is all we're doing, saving face. It's time to come home, said Dr. Paul. Well, I tell you, he got some applause from that.
But then, of course, Huckabee comes back, well, but it's all about honor. And I just wish, you know, that that Paul had a chance to respond to that. It has nothing to do with honor. I mean, it's his honor, but it's their blood that we're losing and the blood of the Iraqi people. And there's going to be chaos if we stay, and there may be a short period of chaos if we leave, but it'll be short and it'll come to an end. As long as we stay there, this is going to continue on and on and on. And you notice that Huckabee is talking about honor, but he's not over there fighting. He's sending other people over there to bleed and fight and suffer and die. And it's the same sort of rhetoric we heard in Vietnam, a war we never intended to win, and I don't think we intend to win this war either.
Well, you know, there were two statements by other conservative candidates, Mitt Romney and Tom Tocchetto, that just shocked me. Obviously, Romney has fallen for the mental trap that anything is justified in war. He said, use of the law to follow people who are teaching doctrines of terror and hate and make sure they're doing that, whether they're doing that in a mosque, in a school, in a playground, or wherever it's being done, we've got to know what's going on. If it means we have to do a mosque wiretap or a church, then that's exactly what we're going to do, because we're going to do whatever it takes to protect the American people. And I hear from people time to time saying, hey, wait a second, we have civil liberties we have to worry about. But don't forget, the most important civil liberty I expect from my government is my right to keep alive, and that's what we're going to have to do. I mean, this kind of the ends justify whatever means is absolutely untrue. There is no reason to have to do illegal wiretaps. You can handle all of this thing within the law. It's just untrue, this paradigm that because there's a little bit of terrorist threat that you have to undermine all of our civil liberties and protections and destroy habeas corpus. And Ron Paul really lambasted them on that, where he says, you know, we're losing our liberties for this and we don't have to do it to do that.
Amen to that. Well, we're out of time, Joel. Thank you so very much. I guess it's been Joel Skousen, World Affairs Brief, and, of course, we'll be looking forward to talking to Joel tomorrow morning on our early morning program. Bye-bye. God bless.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a two-pack for only $99 or a four-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorome. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
I don't mind that I'm getting older, but my wrinkles made me too nervous to smile. It was those fine lines that formed around my cheeks and mouth, and those crow's feet over by my eyes. People were starting to think I looked unhappy, but really I was just embarrassed by those wrinkles. Then I heard about a product called Tautinol. Tautinol is a serum that goes directly on the skin to support collagen and reduce the appearance of wrinkles. And it works. I'm not afraid to smile anymore. Now it's your turn. Today you can get a full bottle of Tautinol. You don't need a prescription, and you don't need surgery to reduce the appearance of those wrinkles. See what Tautinol can do for you and your confidence. It sure gave me something to smile about.
For your risk-free bottle of Tautinol, call 1-800-894-5152. That's 1-800-894-5152. Tautinol is the non-invasive way to reduce the appearance of wrinkles. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-894-5152. That's 1-800-894-5152.
This is Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and certainly after hearing what Joel said today about the coming attack on Iran, what would happen if Iran would do the unthinkable? She should retaliate if we were to kill a few hundred thousand of their people. and destroy the infrastructure of the nation. And, of course, what would happen if they have ships, they have tramp steamers, they could just simply fire a couple of missiles into New York or into Washington, D.C. We wouldn't even know where the missiles came from. Maybe they would have chemical warheads or biological warheads or heaven only knows what else. But what would that do to the structure of our society if they said it hit the West Coast? Or if some of the, there should be some terrorist cells here that were controlled by Iran for just such a time as this. Have you made your preparations? If you have not, let me suggest the video that we're offering, Sheltering in Place, what you would do if there were a nuclear, biological, or chemical attack. The book entitled, Nuclear War Survival Skills, Nuclear War Survival Skills, actually a Department of Defense publication back in 79. And if you get that, well, you can get for $10 a little kit that will allow you yourself to build a radiation meter, and you can determine whether there is any radiation there. Certainly the book we carry. Making the best of basics, I mean, how would you live if there were no water coming out of the faucet? How would you eat if there were no food at the food stores? Have you made any preparations? Well, certainly Making the Best of Basics is a great book, and certainly my wife uses that, just for general knowledge sake. All the knowledge that was known 100 years ago by your grandmother and your great-grandmother, and it's all recorded in Making the Best of Basics. And so the book, Making the Best of Basics, Nuclear War Survival Skills, the kit for making the radiation meter, and, of course, the video Sheltering in Place, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. And then if you haven't laid any supply of emergency food, we'll be glad to send you a catalog that has it listed there and all the other things that you're going to need if there were to be a cataclysmic event. But if you need the catalog, give us a call. We'll send you one free of charge. But if you have one, and we know that we've sent out literally hundreds of those catalogs, and a lot of people are just waiting, think that there's nothing to worry about. Well, I have this sense of urgency, and I hope after hearing Joel today, you will as well. Make your plans and don't put them off. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and order what you can afford. Otherwise, get it wherever you want to. But start laying supplies in at the local food store. Know how to prepare your home to shelter in place. And so you don't need very much, but you do need to have those things on hand. Believe me, if there's a cataclysmic event, why, you're not going to be able to go down to the local store because all of the shelves will be empty. And right now, of course, it's getting increasingly hard to get good food, inexpensive food. Food is getting to be short for the people who are preparing it. The price of wheat has gone up to $8 a bushel from about $2 or $3 a bushel. And, of course, this is going to be passed over, and of course not only that, but more and more of the food that's coming in has been genetically modified, and the food that they have right now is not genetically modified, but they're having more and more trouble getting a food that is not genetically modified, and that food that's genetically modified will make you ill. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You need to get my video, The Brotherhood of Darkness, or the book. You need to get my talk, The Forbidden Secret. You need to get Chris Pinto's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning and Riddles in Stone, his Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2. Excellent videos that give you the background of everything that's going on from a biblical point of view and from a spiritual point of view. And please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty.
Are terrorist cells or prime terror targets located near you? Where are military bases and hazardous waste sites located? How do you find the best area for solar, average rainfalls, fish contamination advisories, and major transportation routes? In the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA, you will find the information you want with over 50 interactive parameters that you control. Find everything from housing prices and taxes to brewing environmental catastrophes. Locate billion-dollar disaster-prone areas, the safest cities, ideal solar locations, and much, much more. Complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information, on each of the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., including 550 high-resolution, full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis that you need. Get this hard-to-find information by ordering Prudent Places USA now for only $29 plus shipping and handling by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438 or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com. Thank you for listening to GCN.
Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and of course the views of our guest. Our guest this afternoon is to have been Professor Peter Little, and his name is Littleback, L-I-L-L-B-A-C-K. And it's a fascinating book. It's called George Washington's Sacred Fire. And of course, the whole idea of the book, and it's almost 1,100 pages, is looking into what the spiritual motivation of George Washington is. And of course, as Professor Littleback points out, why there's some people who say that George Washington, the father of our country, was a deist. He wasn't a real Christian in the modern sense of the terms. And then there are other evangelicals who say, oh no, George Washington was an evangelical Christian, just like us here today. And of course, those people who would support that George Washington was an evangelical Christian are those who point to the Christian history of the heritage of America. And those people who say that George Washington was a deist, or that there really was no Christian foundation for this nation. And so what Professor Littleback has tried to do is to do the research, careful research, to find out where in the truth really lies as far as this is concerned. Because, you see, George Washington's religious faith has certainly an influence on how we perceive America and the heritage of this once great country. Under any circumstances, I think it's important that the American people know what George Washington really believed, because George Washington truly was the father of our country, first in war and first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. He was a great hero. He was the first president of the United States. And his views, I think, reflected those of the majority of the founding fathers. And those people who hate America and who hate Christianity will try to convince you that they were all deists. Now, there were a few of them who were. And certainly, from a purely academic point of view, Benjamin Franklin and, to a lesser extent, Thomas Jefferson were deists, although Jefferson, as he grew older, increasingly became more willing to go along with the Christian faith, although he rejected some of the more extreme forms of Christianity, such as Calvinism. In fact, I have one of exchange of his letters between Thomas Jefferson and his former protagonist, and eventually his close friend John Adams. And of course, there in the letter, why Adams had said, you know, I hope you become a Calvinist before you die. And Thomas Jefferson wrote back to his friend John Adams and said, if that is the presumption, then I will live forever, because I will never become a Calvinist. But they were good-hearted, and certainly Calvinism has many things in it that I can't necessarily agree. But certainly many of the people there were the traditional Christians of that area, and certainly that was what is brought out beautifully in this book about George Washington. He was an Anglican. He believed in the Trinity. And, of course, time and again, when you read his writings, you will realize, of course, that George Washington did embrace the traditional Christian faith that existed here in the United States in the 1700s. But, of course, this has been progressively blotted out from the reality of most Americans.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Hey, Emily. Wow, you look great.
I feel great. I've been using MediCleanse Colon Cleanse.
Really? What is it? How does it work?
Well, MediCleanse is a natural fiber therapy with ground flaxseed, psyllium, and bentonite clay that eliminates toxins from the body. MediCleanse is easy to use without being intrusive. You take 2 tablespoons of MediCleanse powder, mix with water or juice, drink, and it does all the work for you.
Well, that's it? Well, it sounds so easy and convenient.
It is easy. Plus, the FDA says flaxseed works to prevent cancer and helps with menopause, weight loss, irritable bowel syndrome, and constipation.
It helps with all of those ailments? That's amazing.
And the bentonite clay and MediCleanse eliminates viruses and pesticides in the intestinal tract.
Wow. Where can I buy MediCleanse?
A 1-month supply is available online at MediCleanse.com. That's MetaCleanse.com. Or call 1-800-317-9547. That's 800-317-9547.
This is George Whitehurst Berry with the Genesis Communications Network. Welcome to our new program, Crash. Are you ready? In the coming weeks, we will focus on alternative economics as well as alternative health and survival topics. We are now in the largest debt bubble in U.S. history. A subset of the debt bubble is the real estate bubble, and I believe we are in the beginning stages of what could be the biggest real estate crash in our nation's history. For crash updates, visit our website at HearOnOnline.com. That's HearOnline.com. HearOnOnline.com. That's HearOnline.com.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Peter Lilback. Thank you so very much for being with us. Appreciate you taking the time from your busy schedule, but I think this is really a very important book. Could you let our listeners know why you spent, you know, what you must, what, a 10 or 15 years writing this book?
That is correct. It's a great honor to be with you, sir, and it's an honor to share these thoughts with your listening audience. I would say the work of the study on this does go back nearly 15 years. And the reason that I did the work was because I was involved in a interesting small town where there was a Gideon's Bible distribution going on. And in the middle of that, a group came to town by the name of the ACLU. I'm sure you've never heard of that group before, or probably neither have your listeners.
Well, I like to call them the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union. But go right ahead.
Well, I guess you know possibly who they are then. At any rate, they closed down the program, and that startled me because it was actually in the context the early 1980s when it was the year of the Bible or thereabouts, was in, and I thought, this is strange. So I did something I had never done before, and that is I sat down and wrote a letter to the local newspaper editor, and I wanted to complain a little bit about how unjust I thought this was, and I'm sure I shared some thoughts about the faith of our founders and the need for children to have knowledge of the Bible or whatever. And I was pretty proud of myself, but the weekly newspaper I wrote to not only printed my article, a week later they printed a critique of my article by another person in the community, and I was horrified. I didn't realize if you stuck your neck up out of the foxhole, you got shot at. So I got shot at, and I was embarrassed because I thought, well, what if I don't know my stuff? Do I answer this paper? Do I go into debate? And so I made a decision, and that was basically I would not speak or write on this topic again until I was really confident I knew what it was all about. I really knew my stuff. And so for the next several years, I just, as a hobby, I started reading in this field. And then after I had done it for some years, I realized that the area that was least clearly developed in the debate was George Washington. And so I started working on George Washington. And lo and behold, several years later, when I was getting close to being done with my research, some friends had heard that I was getting close to being done, and they said, you know, there's somebody who would like to write a book on Washington. He's written with Dr. Kennedy. His name is Jerry Newcomb. And so we talked, and we started teaming up to write a book because he's a great popular writer. I'm more of a historian scholar type person. And at the end of the day, when Coral Ridge Ministries heard about this, they said, well, if the Providence Forum decides to publish this book, we will advance order something like 18,000 copies. And I thought, my goodness, 18,000 copies, sight unseen, they're going to order it? That really got me serious. So I worked really hard for another year to just get it written with Jerry, and lo and behold, it came out. And I think we've sold in the neighborhood of something like 30,000 copies now, so we're very pleased.
And, of course, it's an academic book, but it reads very, very well. It's easy to read, and, of course, it crystallizes very well the faith and the Christian faith of George Washington. But was he an evangelical Christian, as we talk about evangelical Christians today?
Well, that's a great question. It depends how you define evangelical. Obviously, that word can be defined in different ways. If we mean by it someone who was an evangelist, who openly shared, let's say, the gospel text to convert someone, I don't think we can call Washington an evangelical in that sense. He was very reserved, and he was not someone who made it a point to step out of his military or business or political roles to do Christian missionary or evangelistic work. But if you define evangelical more specifically in the way of someone who believes the historic Christian faith, the truth of the cross, the truth of the resurrection, the truth of salvation through faith, well, the answer there seems to me that he was a member of a church that taught the evangelical Christian faith. In that time in history, he was a very, very active member of the Anglican Church. Their doctrinal standards were the 39 Articles of the Church of England. He actually had commentaries on the 39 Articles. He was a member of a vestry church. His pastors, we can show from their sermons, preached evangelical messages, and he regularly identified himself publicly and privately, both in letters and in worship services, with that historic Christian faith. Even at times participated in the Christian communion service. So all of that suggests that he had an evangelical faith that was consistent with the time in which he lived.
Well, of course, one of the points you make in your book, and so well, is that there are people who do not like the evangelical Christian faith and do not like Christianity as it's presented today. And as they rewrite the history of that era and of George Washington, they insert their own bias, and of course by so doing, why they tend to intentionally undermine any evidence or discussion of George Washington's Christian faith. Would that be a fair appraisal?
I think it is a fair appraisal. We could put it this way. Everybody would like to have George Washington on their side. I mean, after all, he's one of those rare figures that dominate over history, and he always will. As long as there's an America, the name of Washington will be very, very important. And so whatever Washington believed or did or taught or acted upon will be significant in some way for the founding of America. In fact, he understood that. He said, as the first precedent or president under the American Constitution, everything I do will establish a precedent for those to come after me. In other words, he'll have to agree or disagree with what he had done. And so he was very conscious of the impact of his life. Well, all of us know that. And so as a result, it's one of the arguments to try to create a more secular, a more anti-religious world, a modern world, a postmodern world that does not want to have Christianity, is to show that our founders were really not interested in religion or in Christianity, that they were in some way deistic, that is, believing in an absentee creator God. They believe there's a God, but not a God who would speak to us in the scriptures, not a God who came to save his people. And so with those kind of ideas in hand, making Washington less of a Christian makes it easier to argue that America never was all that religious. So now that we're secularists, it's okay, because our founders weren't that important about religion. But if you turn the argument around the other way, if our founders consciously were concerned about the Judeo-Christian ethic, the religion that was the tradition from the Reformation, if they were concerned for the Bible and the teachings of Christianity, then the kind of unreligious secularism that's here today is not consistent with our founding, but is a conscious move away from our founding fathers' vision. And so it's really part of the great debate about who we are as a people, is what did our founders believe.
And of course, you point out in your book why 98.4% of the Americans who were in this country at the time of the Revolution considered themselves to be Christians. Certainly another 1% that claimed to be Catholics. So you have almost 8%, something like that, who were either Protestant or Catholic. We were a Christian nation. And as you point out, that there were many times in the writings and statements, public statements of George Washington, where he talked about the importance of Christianity and being a Christian gentleman and a Christian patriot. And he used the word Christian. And it seems that the people who have written the books that are undermining George Washington's Christian faith just totally ignore those statements.
I would say you're absolutely right. Many scholars write books on Washington as though he had no religious faith. And what they do is they either are unaware of the massive evidence of his religious faith, or they intentionally step around it and bypass it. And so all that I've tried to do is to use Washington's own words, his own historical commitments, relationships, circumstances, and show what that looks like when you put it all together. And it's impossible to turn him into a deist. The evidence from a scholarly, careful analysis shows that he was clearly within the Christian tradition, and you cannot escape it. That's the upshot of my book. So 1,200 pages to show it, and the evidence is there.
And, of course, it's extensively documented. I mean, a couple hundred pages just of documentation. And what about that statement he made to the Delaware Indian Sea?
Well, one of the most exciting passages that I've come across disproves what some scholars have said, and that is, well, Washington never even mentioned the name of Jesus Christ. Well, that's not true. In a remarkable moment with the Delaware Indians, I think it was at Middlebrook was the town, during the early stages of the Revolutionary War, these Indian chiefs brought, or let's say the Indian braves at least, brought the sons of the chiefs to the Americans and said, we want you to train our children and to teach us your religion. And Washington wrote a diplomatic speech that has been preserved that said, of all the things you want to learn from the Americans, and above all, is that you learn the religion of Jesus Christ, for this will make you a greater and happier people than you are. Now, that was something that no deist could ever have said. There was no reason for him to have said it unless he actually believed it. And what's most interesting to me is that he goes on to say, and I'm going to send you on to Congress, and I'm absolutely convinced that they will be happy to assist you in your desire. Now, wouldn't it be great to be able to say, I'm going to send you on to Congress so you can learn about Christianity. I know they will help you. Well, Congress has apparently changed between back then and today.
Well, I think Congress has changed a lot. You can imagine what the ACLU would do about that. And what
right.
The Supreme Court, at least as traditionally constituted, would do, of course. They will not allow a little child to talk about Jesus Christ in the classroom.
That's right.
Even though the Supreme Court opens their sessions with each and every session where the choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court. How could you have that as the tradition of the Supreme Court, but you won't let the name God, the word God, Jesus Christ, be used in a classroom? There's something seriously wrong with what's going on today, and I would like to suggest the very crux of the battle that is taking place across America today is an intense hatred of Christianity and an effort to remove the realization that once we were a great Christian nation.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Oh, what a beautiful day for the beach. Look, up there in the sky. It's Non-X Man. He's in a dive.
He must have found some ugly toenails on the beach.
Let's go look.
I'm Non-X Man, and your toenails need Non-X Nail Gel. Stop hiding them in the sand. Take them out. Let's see.
Ooh. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
Don't worry. Now there's Non-X Nail Gel. Use it on your toenails regularly, and they'll look fantastic when you're barefoot.
Oh, I will, Non-X Man.
Well, I'm off to find more ugly toenails. Don't let Non-X Man find you with unsightly toenails. Buy diabetic-friendly, money-back guaranteed Non-X Nail Gel. It's in the foot care aisle at Supercenters, Walgreens, CVS, Longs, Meijer, Giant Eagle, Car Drug, Snyder's, Duane Reade, Philo, and Rite Aid.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I would like to suggest that the history is always being rewritten. Why? Because they don't want people to know the truth. And they don't want people to understand that George Washington was a Christian. His Christianity was out of the Anglican faith of that era, which believed in the triune God. It was a very formal religion, quite different in many respects than the many of the forms of religion we have today. But no question about the acceptance of the fact that Christ came and was born of a virgin and certainly was crucified and was resurrected, which is the very foundation of the Christian faith and the supernatural occurrence associated with that. But one of the issues, of course, that's made repeatedly by the detractors from George Washington is, well, sometimes George Washington didn't take communion. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's a very good point, because we would recognize that one of the signs of a person's commitment to the Christian faith is his participation in the Lord's Supper, the communion service, or the Eucharist, depending on the phrase that you might use. And the truth is, everybody, as far as I can tell, agrees that Washington was a regular communicant in his church when he was in Virginia before the Revolutionary War. I've never found anybody disagree with that. The reasons are clear. He was an active churchman. He was a vestryman, a church warden. By those high positions in the church, he had to participate. If he did not, he would have had to step out of his offices. And yet he was a thoroughly consistent, active church leader. The testimony from everyone is that he participated. But it is clear that something happened when the Revolutionary War came. And many people say what happened is that he became a deist, and so he didn't participate. Now, that's a possible thesis that we might accept. But the only problem with this is that in the Revolutionary War, there continues to be evidence that is very substantial that shows that Washington communed, but he didn't commune in an Anglican church. And so we might say, what's going on here? Well, I think in your earlier remarks, you put your finger on it, and that is that the King of England was, in fact, the head of the church. And when you sat down at the communion table, you were not only communing with Jesus Christ and with other Christians, but you were also committing yourself to the kingship of the King of England, who is the head of the church. And Washington realized he was not in communion with the head of the Anglican church, the king, because he believed the king had become a tyrant, that he was harming the people in his nation. And he had declared independence from him. But he did not want to declare his independence from Jesus Christ. And the reason that we can see that is that he not only calls himself and calls on his soldiers to be Christians in the Revolutionary War on many occasions, there is evidence that he communed at the Christian Lord's Supper in non-Anglican churches, where he was not kept away from the table by conscience or perhaps by Anglican priests who said, we won't welcome you here. You're leading a rebellion against the head of our church, the king. And so the Presbyterian Church of Morristown, New Jersey, has a wonderful record going back to the early Revolutionary era, and they can tell you exactly where Washington came and communed at the church outside, because the church was being used for a smallpox hospital, and the family that was the pastoral tradition there kept that alive for years. You go to the church today, they have stained glass windows of Washington taking communion at their church building. So it's a living testimony that's still there. We also have records that have been preserved from the testimonies of members of a German Reformed congregation in Philadelphia where he communed. And there seems to be very clear evidence that once the war was over and the American government had been established, that he actually participated in the communion service on the day of his inauguration. It's Mrs. Alexander Hamilton, we've heard that name before, who says, to her children, on two different occasions it's been preserved, that she had the joy of kneeling and taking communion after the inauguration service in New York City with the newly inaugurated President George Washington. So she was an eyewitness that preserved it. So once the war was over and there had been a peace treaty signed and the Anglican Church was no longer in hostility with America because they had now allowed the Episcopal Church, Washington communed in the Episcopal Church, and he did it as the President of the United States. So that's clearly an expression of his commitment to the Christian tradition of his church.
And, of course, the Episcopalianism was simply the American extension of the original Anglican Church. And the trouble is today that most people who know church history, they don't understand the intricacies of what's going on. And there really are people who hate Christianity. I hate to say that, but there are, and they will do anything they can to undermine it, and specifically to undermine any evidence that suggests that George Washington was a Christian, because after all, if they can destroy the concept that George Washington was a Christian, why then they can undermine the very concept that America was founded by Christians under Christian precepts. We were not to have a minister or, you know, in charge of our country. We were to have a free country where men would rule themselves according to God's law.
Order a copy of this show for your friends and family at GCNLive.com or call 877-300-7645.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case there's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you, and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program then helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-373-0402. 1-800-373-0402. Call now. 1-800-373-0402. 1-800-373-0402.
Get the best of both worlds. Solar power for your household essentials and a backup generator all in one. Perfect for hurricane seasons. No long gas lines, no fumes, and no noise. Lower your electric bill and be prepared year-round. Complete solar kits for under $1,200. See the complete solar power generator kit at kensolar.com. Order your solar power generator from Ken's website at kensolar.com.
Are your Federal Reserve notes looking for a safe haven? Mine found it in precious metals. Not paper promises, but actual gold in my possession. It is liquid, it is private. It owes no one, it cannot go bankrupt, and it maintains its purchasing power. Find your answer at Midas Resources. That's 1-800-686-2237. The answer is at 1-800-686-2237.
We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Peter Lilbeck. His book, George Washington's Sacred Fire. Before we go on, Dr. Lilbeck, would you like to get out your telephone number and tell, if you have a website, I would like to have that, and then we'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get copies of your book if they'd like to.
That's great. Thank you so much. Well, what I would recommend your listeners to do, all of you that would like to have a copy of George Washington's Sacred Fire, is that you can go right online with the Providence Forum. Our website is providenceforum.org. That's two words in one. providenceforum.org. That's the best way. But we're excited to say that you can now get the book many, many places. For example, if you happen to be traveling along and you get to Mount Vernon or the National Constitution Center or other historic places, we find that they're carrying our book, which is really exciting. And, of course, you can get it just going to some of the great online bookstores such as Amazon.com as well. But we'd love you to come as a listener to our website, because then you can learn more about the work of the Providence Forum in general. So that's providenceforum.org.
All right, fine. I was just saying that I was really rather surprised to realize that, you know, even after the Revolutionary War, where, of course, the matter of religion was left up to the individual states, and in Virginia, at least for a few years after the Revolutionary War, why, you had to attend church, the Anglican Church, and you had to pay to support the Anglican Church. And then along came Thomas Jefferson and I guess Madison, and they, of course, changed those laws, didn't they?
They did. But one of the things that's interesting is that Thomas Jefferson and Madison both agreed very strongly that when religion is imposed by a state, it always creates religious persecution, a denial of some freedoms, and at the end of the day, it creates hypocrisy, people who just join something they don't believe. And their arguments are telling, and I think most people today would recognize them to be very, very true. It is much more authentic when a person doesn't have to worship by any compulsion of state law, and he worships freely. And that's the point. After all the laws were banished for required worship, required tithes, Washington continued to worship freely, indicating it wasn't something he did because the government was forcing him to do it. It was part of who he was as a human being. And he was consciously aware that his life was setting an example for others. He believed that religion and morality were important for the nation, and therefore it was important for him, who was leading the nation, to set an example of the importance of religion for the people. And so when he was in the presidency and his local church was close, he never missed on Sundays. Now, when he was at Mount Vernon, where the closest church was maybe 9 or 10 miles away across rutted and muddy, bumpy roads, he sometimes didn't make it because sometimes they didn't have preachers there. They had circuit riders a lot of times as well. And the evidence is from the family that Washington would read sermons or have someone read sermons to his family, and that he often, according to the records of others, would read a chapter from the Bible before the family went to worship. So the Bible and Christian sermons were a very important part of the Washington household. They worshiped not because they were required to by law, but because that was their commitment.
And I really believe both Jefferson and Madison believed, of course, that religion was important. They just didn't want the state to be able to impose it upon people, because whenever the state can impose religion upon people, then the state can manipulate people using religion to aggrandize the power of the state. So what they did in the Virginia Bill of Rights was really very important to the establishment of the very concepts upon which America is founded. Would that be a fair appraisal?
I think it is a very fair appraisal. It's clear that in the what was called the Memorial and Remonstrance, that's quite a mouthful, but that was what Madison wrote against the bill that had been established to have state funding to have teachers of religion in Virginia. Washington was not troubled by that. He actually said, I don't have any problem if taxpayer dollars are used to have Christian teachers supported by government money, as long as those who aren't Christians have a way of relief from the tax. He didn't want anybody to pay what they didn't believe, but he said, you claim to be a Christian, and we shouldn't be upset that you're going to be taxed at Christian schools. That's fine. Well, Madison saw that, and he disagreed, and part of his arguments are not only the concern of state power and the potential abuse and the violation of conscience, but he also said because he wanted Christianity to flourish, interesting, he wanted Christianity to flourish, he said we should not use a method that will in any way encourage a counterfeit form or a hypocritical form of Christianity. We want the pure Christianity of one who really believes it to exercise his faith. And so Madison's argument was not, let's get rid of taxes for religion because I'm anti-Christian. It was actually the opposite. So let's get rid of taxation for religious groups in the state so that the real Christian faith will flourish. And by the way, that's true. Wherever there's a state church in the world today, it's declining and almost disappearing. But where churches, as in America, are free to do their own work and they have no government support, well, they are strong and healthy because they realize this is what we believe and we give to what we believe. So Madison's argument has been sustained. Now, Jefferson's faith is a little more complicated. and we don't have time to pursue it, but let me just say this. It's clear that Jefferson understood that the Bible and Christian teachings were important for the health of the nation. Under his presidency, he provided funding for building of churches for Indians, for getting Bibles out to schools, and he was one who said that the ethics of Jesus are the best that the world has ever seen, the duty to love our neighbor. So he was very concerned that people had Christian teaching, and his personal religion was one that was very personal. He did not like to talk about religion, and that's a debated topic in its own right.
Well, maybe sometime where you can do a 1,000-page book on that. I think it's a fascinating subject and something which has always fascinated me. But certainly when you have a church that people have to pay into, then there's a very real incentive for people to get up high in that church so you can get your hands on all the money.
That's exactly
Whereas, of course, when it's a voluntary thing and there's not that much money there, why, of course, people go into the ministry because they want to preach the Word of God, not because they want personal aggrandizement. And this is what really disturbs me so much about the faith-based initiatives where they've been paying off our Christian churches across America to go along with the current administration. But let's not get into a political discussion, because I would really like, of course, to stay with your analysis of the faith of George Washington. And there's so many quotations that are compiled here about what George Washington wrote about Christianity. And he wasn't really in the least bit shy about talking about, you know, how important Christianity was for the army and the chaplains and the religious beliefs of the soldiers, was he?
That's exactly right. He was very concerned that the Christian faith would impact his soldiers. In fact, he told his men at Valley Forge that they needed to realize that while they were doing something very noble to be patriotic and fight for their country, they needed to add even a higher element to their character, and that was of being a Christian. He saw patriotism as really important. You'd expect a general of an army that's fighting for independence to say that. He said to them, it's even more important that you be a Christian. That was an evangelistic statement. He called his soldiers to be Christian soldiers, defending the dearest liberties and rights of their nation. And he constantly encouraged clergymen and chaplains in the military. And he even helped to see sermons to be distributed to soldiers. There's a special prayer that actually is developed by Washington's favorite chaplain, a man by the name of Abiel Leonard, a beautiful Christian prayer for a soldier. Washington had it in his own library. It was distributed to his soldiers. It was kind of like their book of daily prayer for a soldier, and it was very Christian. So he had a very deep interest in his men's faith. You can understand this. He was aware that Christianity created moral men. Moral men created good soldiers. But he also understood that soldiers were getting ready to lay down their lives. And that meant they needed to be ready to face eternity. And having the Christian faith close at hand is very important. At the end of the war, one of the Presbyterian church leaders came and said, well, there's a new Bible that's available by a man named Aitken. Actually, the American Congress in 1782 produced a Bible that with their blessing on it. It was actually done by an individual, but they had reviewed it and recommended it to the American people. And Washington said if the idea had come earlier before he'd sent half of his army home, he would have accepted the idea of giving every soldier a copy of the Bible as an expression of thanks for their work in the military. Washington himself was a very deep Bible reader. There are over 200 different Bible allusions, references, quotes that I've come across in his writing. And that's, I think, the second appendix of my volume there will show that. So, a man of faith that was very concerned that preaching and the gospel were part of his army.
Well, of course, where did you get the information? Did you get it from the writings? There, I know there are volumes and volumes of the letters of George Washington. Was that the source of your research, or what did you primarily use?
Yes, there's a 37-volume set that was done at about the time of the bicentennial of Washington's birth back in 1932. That's just filled with his letters, one after another. And we've worked through those, and thankfully, now with the help of the Library of Congress, it's been computerized, so you can do easier research on it. That really helps a lot. And you don't have to pick up every volume. You actually can print them out in the privacy of your own study. So you can get those by going online at the Library of Congress. At anybody's laptop can find them, which makes it easier to do research this way. But then also, I began to realize that no one had ever carefully analyzed the books in his own library. So I went to the Boston Athenaeum, which is where most of his library has ended up being collected. That's a long story how it got there. But that they have cataloged his books, and then I began to follow up as many of those books as I could, either there or from other sources, and I discovered that many of the things he collected were in fact religious. Many of them were sermons. Washington actually had a sermon collection in his own library that he had bound. And when you look at those sermons, you discover that some of them he not only had read, but he had also written to the preacher who'd preached it. And in those cases, he sometimes said, I agree with it, I delighted in it, the doctrine in them is sound. And the one that he said, the doctrine in it is sound, I especially loved, because that sermon was written to disprove deism and to prove the truth of Christianity. So Washington as a deist had to be the biggest liar in history, or he actually was very clearly a Christian man, delighting in a Christian sermon that was critiquing the dangers and falsehood of deism.
Would you comment, of course, on his relationship with Thomas Paine? Now, for our listeners, Thomas Paine had written Common Sense, and many people, of course, attributed to Paine's and Paine's writings really one of the major impetuses for the American Revolution. And so certainly George Washington supported Paine and his stimulating and certainly a very seminal work as far as creating the background to our revolution. But when Thomas Paine then wrote a book called The Age of Reason, in which he, of course, took out up to Christianity and did everything he could to undermine the Christian faith, didn't that, of course, change the relationship? And what happened at that time?
I think you've asked an excellent question. It is clear that during the American Revolutionary War and before, Washington had the highest regard and respect for Thomas Paine, a Britishman who helped to argue that the British crown was now violating the fundamental rights of Americans and independence was justified. That was Common Sense, and it was an impactful book on Washington. But later, when Thomas Paine wrote the book, The Age of Reason, that attacks Christianity, suddenly Washington never communicates again with Thomas Paine. Even when Thomas Paine had written some of these books and then ended up being in France and getting caught in the French Revolution and wanted to be rescued, Washington did not involve himself in the matter. And people have often wondered, well, what happened here? Well, as I've studied Washington, it's clear that as a very quiet person in his own personal approach to the world, and also one who did not want to get himself into a situation where he would be forced to get into a public debate on a topic that was very difficult for him to address, that he would just use the method of non-communication. And so his non-communication with Paine after the Age of Reason demonstrates he did not agree with him, he was upset with him, and he did not write to him. It made Paine so mad that it caused him to begin to write public attacks against Washington, criticizing him and tearing him apart, and Washington still remained quiet. So it's clear that Washington was not a deist, delighting in the deist faith of Thomas Paine, but actually quite the opposite. Like many other Americans, they were horrified that someone who had been such a great leader for the American cause had now turned against the Christian faith that was so important to the American soldiers in the new country.
And I think really one of the most significant things is that that George Washington was a very quiet, a very unassuming individual. And he was never out there talking about in great detail about his Christian faith or telling everybody how he was communing with God or God was speaking to him and telling him this and that. He was very, 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 very personal. And he was not somebody who was after his own aggrandizement. Would that be a fair statement?
That is very true. That one of his clergymen, Bishop White from Philadelphia, said that he often remarked, if you didn't know who George Washington was when you were in his company, you would never know that he was a man who had made a mark on history. He would never speak of himself, and he always was looking for a way to care for others. So he had, if you will, a profoundly humble and gracious spirit, qualities that are very dear to a true Christian gentleman. So there was a reserved dignity that he had by way of perhaps his Virginia nobility upbringing, his temperament, which was very inward. He did not like to talk about himself. And then I think just the Christian virtue of humility, which he prized very highly. It was not about yourself. You were given great talents and gifts to bless others. And that's how he lived his life. He truly is a role model of what Christians have come to call a servant leader, a man who takes his great gifts that have been given to him and invests them in a public way for the good of others. Washington is a great role model.
And I don't even think he necessarily wanted to be the president of the United States after the war. He wanted to retire. He wanted to go back to his home. He wanted to live out his life in peace and quiet.
That's right. There's an interesting point here. We've heard of Cincinnati, Ohio. Many people don't realize that there was a Roman general by the name of Cincinnatus, and it was Washington who helped people rediscover this gentleman named Cincinnatus. He was the Roman general who conquered, and he was so effective in the battle that what he ended up doing was coming home as a victor, and instead of becoming a great leader, he said, just let me retire to my farm and be a farmer. And that was Washington's vision. Let me go back to Mount Vernon, which the place he called, using biblical language, my vine and my fig tree, a place of retirement. He was a man not seeking power, but of service and humility.
And yet, of course, the other people wanted him to be the leader, who was the one man that could unite the country. And he did, and he did it very effectively, and laid the foundation for America. And that's why they are so intent upon trying to convince you he was not a noble Christian. Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Bobby Likas with another Car Clinic Minute. No hitters, mid-court shots, and quarterback blitzes all make for a doozy of a game. But did you know doozy originates not in the world of sports, but in the world of automobiles? When I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
I'm Bobby Likas, and I've discovered a fountain of youth for cars. One reason our cars get old before their time is the same thing that keeps them going, fuel. The carbon deposits left by fuel burned in your engine can choke off its air and fuel mixture, reducing efficiency. The BG Fuel Service removes harmful carbon buildup, dramatically improves power and mileage, and includes BG44K to treat the entire fuel system. To learn more, go to BGFindTheShop.com.
BG. When something's a real doozy, it's spectacular, larger than life. Just like the car that coined the expression. In the 1920s, the classic Model J Duesenberg, with its long ornamental hood and speed of 125 miles an hour, was considered a standard of excellence. Its name, Duesenberg, was shortened to doozy to describe anything top-notch. The stock market crash of 29 took the high-priced luxury car off the assembly line, but the expression has survived. Now, I hope you have a doozy of a day. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. We've all seen the tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today. Or visit TornadoAir.com.
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Matthew Wyman. Matthew, you had a quick announcement you wanted to make? Matthew, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Well, first of all, Dr. Stan, I read your book, In the Shadows, the Brotherhood of Darkness, I should say. Another good one is In the Shadows of Power, about CFR. And it's pretty darn clear. There's so much research that's been done following the Illuminati all the way back to Bavaria, into the Knights Templar, the First Bankers, and the folks who are behind this are the World Bankers, and above them, the Illuminati, which is a Luciferian organization that meets in Northern California, Bohemian Grove, and is currently the Skull and Bones Administration belongs to it. There's just so much damning evidence out there.
Well, now, you wanted to make an announcement, so why don't you go ahead?
Well, I do. I want to let people know that this Friday, tomorrow at 7 p.m. at the Veterans Hall in downtown Santa Cruz, near the town clock, I will be presenting this incredible quantity of evidence to help the people come together, whether over Christ or over the love of their planet that's being destroyed and consumed. That they can see this information and come together.
All right, now that's at the Veterans Administration hall there, sitting right next to the post office. What time is that tomorrow?
Well, that could start at 7 p.m. and the show starts at 7:30.
All right, fine. So the Veterans Hall there on Front Street, I guess it is, and of course, 7:30 tomorrow evening, and Matthew will be presenting. Anything else you wanted to say?
Oh, that's just it. God bless you, Dr.
God bless you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And let's go. So, Mike, you also have an announcement. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, another announcement. On September 11th, the movie Terror Storm will be presented at the Rio Theater at 7 p.m. by Santa Cruz 911 Truth Organization. One showing only, in commemoration of the tragic events of September 11th, 2001.
That's a
This is the updated version produced by Alex Jones, revealing a history of government-sponsored terrorism. So,
right.
Please join us for an educational evening and gain an understanding of the way our government uses war and terror to implement foreign and domestic policy.
All right, that is the Rio Theater, and where is that?
That's on SoCal Avenue on the way into town. I don't have the exact...
All right, what time is that?
At 7 p.m.
All right, we see Bright comes into SoCal.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
God bless. Thanks very much,
okay.
Mike.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine. And so these are our local issues, but we certainly wanted to get the announcements out. That's on 9/11, and that's September 11th, and that's going to be at the Rio Theater. Well, this is the time when I do need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you believe, as I do, that this is a spiritual battle being fought on the political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, and that anything that supports the concept that America was at one time a great Christian nation has to be undermined and destroyed. And that's why my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is so very important, and my talk on the Forbidden Secret, Chris Pinto's two great DVDs, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, and his award-winning DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone. If you were to see all of these, you would know more than most college professors and most college graduates. And I'll tell you what, when I graduated from college, I had no idea of the true history of our nation, or, of course, that there is an organized, orchestrated effort to destroy what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. And the enemy is not, of course, over in Afghanistan or Iraq. The enemy is here and their headquarters. One of them is at 5868 Street in New York City, the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations. And they work through the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Ford, through our major universities. And their desire is to destroy the sovereignty of our nation and merge us into a one-world government with a one-world religion and a one-world ruler, exactly as prophesied in the scriptures. Our number, 1-800-544-8927.
This is Jack Blood with the Genesis Radio Network, and I have an urgent message for our listeners. The mass media keeps telling us that we are the richest, most powerful economy in the world. If this is true, why can't we pay our bills? Why is the United States the world's largest debtor nation? The truth is...